as little as that is, if you do it with detail and do it the right way, people begin to garner trust in you. And then that's how you get more responsibility. And that's how ultimately, when it comes time to find a job.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Chris Capco, the associate head coach at SMU. Coach Capco has built his career through a number of stops across college basketball, including roles at Marshall, Stetson, Georgia Southern, USC, FIU, and a return to USC before eventually following the staff to SMU. Along the way, he's developed a reputation as a strong recruiter, player developer, and someone who has helped programs build and sustain success. In this episode, we discuss how to gain trust from your head coach and fellow assistants when you're a new coach in a program, how coaches can instill confidence into their players, and ways assistant coaches can separate themselves from the majority in the profession. Please welcome to the podcast, Chris Capco. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome, everyone. Thanks all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo here, alongside the associate head coach at SMU Southern Methodist University, Chris Capco. Coach Capco, welcome to the podcast.
Appreciate you guys having me on. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
So number one thing, as we always like to do, is we like to bring people back to the beginning, ultimately where it started, just talk on that a little bit, and then progress into where you're at now and giving people an idea of your background, your history, and what you've done so far. But one thing that everybody knows, especially about this business, is you can't do it yourself, right? You always need good people and people around you. So I guess the number one thing, I know starting from the beginning, if I'm not mistaken, Marshall University, one of the first positions that you're in, and then progress, obviously there's a lot in between, but now being it's SMU, there definitely had to have been some people who helped transition and helped you through that process. So just tell us about just some of the biggest influences, people who helped you step-by-step teach you the game and teach you about the business.
Yeah, you said it best. There's just like in any profession or anything, you have some people who champion you and who help you along the way. I've been fortunate. We don't have enough time to go over everybody, so I'll try to condense it. Really, the head coaches and then every staff I've worked for, right? Because at each place, I was prepared more for the next place. Some of that is just through experience, right? Now you're getting your hands dirty and you're doing certain things, so it makes you better. And then some of it's what your coaches and the people around you allow you to do. And what I've been fortunate is everyone I've worked for has given me a ton of autonomy and just allowed me to do a lot. And to take it back to when I was a GA, Donnie Jones was the head coach at Marshall. I was a GA there. I had no idea what to expect. I was just ready to go in there and work hard. And the staffs were structured so much differently than they are now. It wasn't as big, right? Like we had three assistant coaches, an ops guy, and then GAs, and that was it. So me and the other GA, we did a lot. And luckily, they gave us the freedom to do a lot. So as a GA, I was on the floor working guys out constantly because at that time the coaches couldn't be on the floor with them in the summer. So really it was on us. We were doing team stuff. We were doing individual workouts. So there was a lot of responsibility there with us in terms of that. The ops guy allowed us to, and this has nothing to do with basketball, right? But from young guys who are getting in the business, you're like players trying to get into a rotation. And even as where I'm at in my career, coaches at his career, you guys are your career, you're leaving people with impressions. And you're giving them confidence in the ability to do what you can do. So I was asked with setting up a shoot around times, practice times on the road, having the meals ready. That was one of my deals. And all the coaches had their things about where they wanted to eat from and what they wanted with their meals. And as little as that is, if you do it with detail and do it the right way, people begin to garner trust in you. And then that's how you get more responsibility. And that's how ultimately, when it comes time to find a job, they're really working their tail off to make calls for you because they have a trust and a confidence in what you can do. To this day, and I'm getting a little bit off topic, but I'll bring it back. To this day, I know are the young people who I've been around who don't work hard, who ask me to make calls for them. And I will sit there and tell them and be pretty explicit with them. Look, it's going to be hard for me to do this because such and such and such, because they deserve to know too. So little things like that, where I was doing video, we were doing video. We didn't have a video coordinator, right? We were working on scouts. So I was seeing what went on behind the scene. We were helping with recruiting visits, driving coach to the airport, just doing so many things that were one, basketball related, and then two, had nothing to do with basketball, but you did them to the best of your ability. And then that's how you get the next job. So Sean Finney was an assistant coach there. Donnie Jones, Tim Thomas, Darren Tillis, Brett Nelson, all those guys played a pivotal role in allowing me to get to the next step because of the freedom and the responsibility that they gave us to get better. And then it was on me to do it to the best of my ability. And that gave them confidence to make a call for me. That was Marshall. I don't know if you want me to keep going, but that was Marshall. And that was everything that kind of went on there.
I'm sure you could probably go down the list of everybody with all the different universities. And I wasn't necessarily like you have to go through every one, but it's more just in the beginning of your career, right? Like with that being at Marshall, because I feel like that's where the connections really start. And that's where you really start to learn. And that's the one thing that we try to do the most is just let the young people, and really everybody has to learn it at some point in their career, but let the young people realize like those are the biggest and most pivotal points in your career. Everybody wants that head coaching opportunity, but it's the time when you're the GA, the things that you learn from that. And as you said, sitting in the film room. How many times sitting in that film room did you sit there and ask questions? Like, were you able to ask questions? Now, granted, obviously not with the players, but with the coaches.
Yeah, a bunch. And then just soak everything in, take notes, or just try to learn as much as you can. So, yeah, it comes from asking questions, just sitting there listening. Again, like I tell young people this, if you have a task at hand, so like me figuring out the meals, right, that takes me away from basketball. But to me, that was important to do because that was what was asked of me. So if I skip on that to be around basketball, then, and I'm not doing this, then my coaches lose confidence in me. But you spend so much time with each other that organically you will learn basketball. You're going to be around coaches enough in the hotel, shoot around, practice, after games, before games. Organically, you'll talk enough basketball and you'll hear enough basketball and you'll watch enough basketball that all that stuff will happen how you want it to. And your coaches will get a sense of what you do know and what you don't know, or what you need to improve on, or what you're strong at already. So, you know, like asking the questions, like you said, but you're just around it so much that naturally you learn. You need to be a sponge. You need to try to take everything in. I think take notes. That's what helps me. But you're around it just so much. You live in the gym. When I was a GA, I had no wife, no family. I had nothing. So I was in the gym constantly. And you're just a sponge to everything that's going on. You should be constantly learning.
Yeah, for sure. You said two things I love, man. And the people that listen to this pod and follow this, they can never hear it enough. The first thing is, we were literally just talking about this on a recent episode we just recorded. But the idea that if you can be trusted with a little bit, eventually you can be trusted with a lot. But the key to that, and we live in a society now, and I think our professions, pretty much a lot of professions are a reflection of society, but coaching in particular from a standpoint of, in society, we want to skip steps at times. Everybody wants the fast track. Even McDonald's gave in with two drive-through lanes at some point because they couldn't take it anymore, right? Because nobody wanted to wait. Nobody has patience. Nobody has the delayed gratification. I won't say nobody, but the delayed gratification isn't sexy as it used to be.
More limited.
But as young coaches, you cannot skip steps. And skipping steps is not thinking that meal order for the staff and players is as important as getting on the court, right? Everybody wants to do the glory stuff, but if there is not really any cheat codes in this profession, but if there are a couple, is taking glory in the stuff that doesn't bring you individual glory at the moment. And be willing to work in the dark and be willing to do the stuff when no one's watching and taking pride in that, because eventually you'll be able to be in a situation where you're doing things where everybody's watching, but you can't skip steps. And I love the fact that you said that. Who was your first inspiration in terms of getting into coaching? Did someone see it in you before you saw it yourself, or with, did you watch somebody as a young player that inspired you and said, man, I may want to try coaching someday because I really enjoyed either my high school coach or college coach? Or was that, who's that person in your life?
My high school coach, I wouldn't say he inspired me to be a coach, but my high school coach gave me a lot of confidence to be in basketball. I played on a really good high school team, played with a bunch of just high-level recruits. We were really good, and I was always the least talented guy. But he always gave me, and I tried to take this where I'm at today, he always just gave me a lot of confidence that I belong. And I know you see this, Coach. You guys see this. We deal with a lot of delusion in this business. And I did not come from a delusional household. My family was really honest with me, really honest with me. Let's put it like this. I was never saying I was going to be in the NBA. My family wasn't talking about it. We just wanted to get me through school. But with that comes confidence, right? And my high school coach gave me that. I want to say he had one of the most profound impacts on me just from that, and just in terms of giving me confidence and telling me I belong. I think, and just giving me passion for it. The confidence drove me, I think, to continue working and just get through college and playing college and all that stuff. And then I had a passion for it, as do most people in this business. And I think that's what got me into coaching, is that, because I knew I wasn't going to play in the NBA. I knew I wasn't going to have this long career where I played till I was 40 or whatever. And I was just going to fall back on that. And so when the time came and I got my degree, and now I'm trying to figure out what I wanted to do, at that point, I knew I wanted to coach. And it wasn't someone who steered me in that direction or anything like that. I actually ended up working a real job. I worked at JPMorgan Chase as a performance analyst at my first job out of college. That's what drove me into coaching, working a real job. Exactly. It took me about 3 months to say, you know what, this isn't for me. And that's when I started reaching out to people. And luckily, Coach Jones gave me a chance at Marshall to do that. But it was in that time where I was making pretty good money. It was a great first job. It was a great learning experience. And I went from making good money to making $4,000 for the year as a GA at Marshall. But I was so much more happier. And I realized in that period, I missed the camaraderie. I missed being on the floor. I missed being at the games. I just missed everything that went around it. And so I don't want to say I lack purpose, but I lack purpose, right? What am I doing? What do I want to do long term? And that's what drove me to it. Yeah. So I don't think there was one person in particular. My high school coach used to always say you should get into coaching and stuff like that. But I think his impact on me was beyond that, just the confidence he gave me, because he always talked. He was just a great guy and he was demanding. But then we could also have a conversation at the end of the day about what everything, you know, how things would look for me as we move forward and stuff like that. But I think just overall, my passion drove me to it, because still to this day, some of that stuff that I missed when I was out of it. Like, I love practice to this day. I love preparing for a game. I love the game. The game is the second best thing to me after playing. And though I can't play anymore. So there's just so many things that come with being around this. But you guys know that it's so fulfilling, yeah, that once took it away, you could see why, you know, you'd want to be back in it.
Yeah, 100% said, man. Yeah. Now, for me, it was a summer job working Pizza Hut that drove me, that made me realize, okay, yeah, not this.
And the same for everybody, right? Like, you should follow what you're passionate about. Yeah.
You have to. Yeah, because if you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
That full-time job is...
Oh, go ahead, Doug.
As soon as you get out of college, did the same thing. Corporate sales job. It's like, nope, this is not it. You find out who you are and what you like real quick. But you keep mentioning how your high school coach instilled confidence in you. In what ways does a coach, or did he, instill that confidence in you? Because I feel like sometimes coaches really tend to break people down. They can, depending on I've seen coaches before, like, they'll just bark at them and yell at them. Like, in what ways did your coach instill that confidence?
Yeah, and I think, again, it goes back to my parents and maybe a different time. I don't know. As we get older, you start to look at things differently, but kids do need to hear truth. So he would be on me now. And when I went home, we talked about delusional earlier. My parents never came home and were like, man, I don't know what, man, coach is tripping. You should have shot more. You should have played more. You should have done more. They went home, man, if I complain, did coach tell you to do this? Yeah, he told you to do it, then do it. It's just what it was. The coach was right. And so he would be demanding on me. But then when I was around better players than me all the time, and I was honest enough to understand that, even in high school. And it's easy to have self-doubt if you don't come from a basketball family. I didn't grow up training to play basketball all the time. We just played on the blacktop all the time. And so when I got into high school, there was a lot of self-doubt at times, because I would always wonder if I was good enough, right? And so he would be demanding on me. But he started me as a sophomore at a time where I was like, man, dang, I can't believe I'm starting. Even myself, right? He'd be like, man, you're just as good as all these other guys, man. And then through mistakes, I could see him letting me play more. But it also, he would tell me, he would be very honest and explicit about what I needed. Hey, play hard, defend, pass the ball. Look, these other guys score better than you. Set them up, right? Do this. And so I thought I always had a clear set of understanding as to what got me on the floor. And then him reminding me that, hey, if I messed up, yeah, he got on me. And then after the fact, you're better than that. You can do this, or you should do that, or look to do this. Or so I always thought there was a good balance of being hard on me, but also telling me you're better than this, or you can do more than this. And because I do feel like there is that balance. Kids need truth, and your players need honesty, because there is a lot of delusion around them. So they need honesty. But you also do believe in them, or you wouldn't have recruited them to come to your program. So there is a belief that they can get better at certain things, but in the short term or in the present, they need to understand what the truth is and where they are at with everything. And it's an ongoing process, right? Like, my confidence got so much better by the time as I was a senior, as it should, because I got better, I'm more experienced. But I think I hit probably success in my way in terms of just being able to start. I wasn't averaging 20 points or 15 points, but I started. Then I started on a state championship team. My numbers got incrementally better. My confidence got a little bit better, and my game took off as much as it could, right, in those circumstances. I felt like I always got better, and I felt like I belonged, and try to do the same thing with our kids to this day.
Yeah. Man, Mike Bray's been on this pod before, and that was one of his battle cries as a head coach, is be confidence givers, right? Because, again, there are – part of that delusion that kids are surrounded by, that to me, that even causes more sometimes a lack of confidence, because when they play, their performance doesn't match the delusion. So there's sometimes there is a gap between what they're doing physically and what they're hearing from everybody else. And so you have to, that balance and that truth and love, honesty and confidence, it's a big deal. It really is. And it depends on what the moment needs, because it can never be too much of one and not enough of the other. But the day or the moment or the phase or whatever they're in usually gives you the trigger on which one that they need. But especially now, guys having confidence, because there is delusion. There's an insecurity that comes with that delusion, because they know sometimes how good they are or how good they're not. And cutting out all the noise and dealing with, hey, the truth, and hey, here's the film, whether your numbers say, what's the film say, there's different ways to give them truth. It could be verbal, could be video, could be however it comes. But I'm glad you said that, because that's a great thing for young coaches, is don't just be a hype guy, you know, as a young coach. Don't be a glorified cheerleader. If you can learn to be a truth teller as a young coach in your own way, whatever capacity that is, that's a big step to growing as a young coach.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And especially if you want to be a head coach, there's no other way around it. Like, you have to be honest with your kids and your staff and just everyone in your program, or you're just not going to get any better and you're not going to be successful, because we all have our own weaknesses, and we're just sitting there masking around them and just not being honest with them, with the kids and stuff like that, because we're just in a different generation. Like, these kids, I've seen, you know how many times, I know you all have seen it, how many times I've seen a kid have a bad performance and they go online and see a mixtape that would tell you otherwise. And that's delusion. And like, the kids need to know where they stand, why they're not playing. And it's okay. Like, I hear so many people talk about, I'm sticking to the process or believe in the process, and then the process hits them. And it's all that stuff we were talking about, process, where to go. So there's, right. and it's okay to go through that. It's okay to go through that. Understand that too. And for the most part, not all parents, but for the most part, and it's okay to go through that stuff. And that's where you got to get better, through the tough times, and you're going to hit it. If it wasn't with us in college, you're probably going to find it in the NBA. At some point, everyone, even the pros I've coached, go through some level of adversity at some point or another. And it's just how you handle and how you get better from it. And
no doubt. No, there's a skipping steps with that too. We talked about young coaches skipping steps like that. There's a skipping steps with that, that players got to, you can't be jumping rungs in the ladder in terms of your own development. Yeah, said, brother, said.
No, and especially the fact of, usually it's the parents. I feel like there's two types of parents. There's the ones who really are instilling the confidence, exactly to your point, telling them like, hey, listen to the coach, do this, do that, do as he says. And there's the other ones who maybe they're living vicariously through their player or through their athlete and telling them that you need to be doing better because they're trying to make them live up to what they wanted to do when they were kids. And it's like, you're just putting so much in their head. We've all seen it all, right? There's a bunch of different spectrums, but it's definitely, there's a lot of people and a lot of commotion going on. And people said, you got social media, you got all these different platforms now, that it's crazy. But one thing I do want to make sure to touch on is just your career so far, right? Going into your role, your philosophy. Now, one thing I want to make sure to highlight for everybody is, and I'll do the bragging for you here, but you were recognized as one of the nation's top assistant coaches, a top Power Five assistant coach. You were invited to the 2023 NCAA Champion Forum in Indianapolis and to the Athletic Director U's Collegiate Consortium. So you've seen and been in some of the rooms with some of the best assistants, best coaches. You've been invited, and not even invited. You are one of those top assistant coaches. One, I'm sure that feels great, but with those great accolades, when you step into those rooms, like, what do you feel personally that really helped separate you from the majority to be able to get you into those rooms, to be able to get you those opportunities?
So I'm going to sound like a little bit of a, I guess, curmudgeon. I don't get too high on that stuff, to be honest with you. So you asked me, like, what separates me? I believe in my ability. I believe in my ability to coach, know the game, recruit, develop talent, all that stuff. What separates me? I don't know. Here's what matters to me is these lists come out and they're great. And I was... The NCAA College Coaching Consortium that I went to was one of the best things I've ever been to. I was so blessed to go, and I still have relationships from that day. But what matters to me is the people who I work around, what they think of me, because they see me every day. Literally, no one who worked at, I have friends who I think would be good coaches, but I don't know until I get in the trenches with them. And so the guys I've been in the trenches with, I'm at what they think of me. That's the opinion that matters to me. And that does matter because I am responsible as the associate head coach to do things at a certain level because they're relying on me and because my boss is relying on me. So that stuff matters. So as I compare to other guys, I don't know what separates me, to be honest with you. I know I have a deep belief in my ability and what I do. We've had success from USC, sustained success, all the way through 2 years now here at SMU at jobs that have historically not been wired to be really good. And so I think that stuff helps and that shows it. But again, I'm not alone in it. I have a boss that does a really good job, and I have people surrounded by me who do a really good job. So to answer your question, I'm confident in my ability. I don't know what separates me because I don't know how good everybody else is. And that's the honest truth. And you'll see as I get to know you guys as we move forward, I'm pretty honest. And I just think that's the way to go about it. So I guess some of it, to answer your question, is the success that we had at USC in terms of winning games, making the tournament, and how we elevated the program, and then now how we are at SMU, going from the American to the ACC and what we've done in our short time here. So I guess that's what it is. But to me, honestly, all that matters. And look, I'm appreciative to be on any list or to be invited to anything, but no one truly knows how good I am unless you've been in the trenches with me and for everybody else too, right? Yeah. I talk to people and I get a sense for who I think knows stuff or who I think is good. But honestly, we haven't been in the trenches. I don't really know either.
Yeah. No, that's great because...
Doug, I hope I answered your question right there, but to me, that's the truth. And that's the honest truth, the best way I could say it. I don't know what it is that separates me, but... I ask the people maybe who've been in the trenches with me, who've been in the trenches with other people. I just know I come to work every day. I'm pretty consistent. I have a pretty good energy to myself. I work hard. I think I'm relatable, but I don't know.
Winning never hurts. It's the old school approach. Like if you, in terms of developing and moving forward in your careers, if you know it, I had an old head that told me a long time ago, if you win, they come looking for everybody. And take that, have that peace of mind as you go about your daily stuff of just, you focus on winning and helping your players be as much better than they are as you can do, then those two things will always travel. But that's a challenging one in our profession these days, because that's that list that Doug mentioned, there's about five or six other lists out there. And young coaches have to be careful not to chase recognition, right? But just chase your daily craft. How can I make wherever I'm at? How can I make my staff better? How can I add value daily to the people around me? whether it's serving up if to the staff, if you're a support person, collaborating with your across, or giving down, giving back, helping the managers, helping the young GAs, whatever that is. So there's a 360-degree way to add value that way. But I think if when that becomes the obsession, typically the opportunities tend to find you. But I'm glad, again, you said something that our profession needs to hear and can't ever hear enough. It's just be the best coach you can be. Don't focus on being an associate head coach somewhere, or focus on being an assistant if you're a GA. Just focus on being the best in your role. And typically, it's crazy how it happens, but it's happened for so many years in this business. The next opportunity tends to knock you upside the head if you're just focused on doing your daily stuff.
Agreed.
No, yeah, you hit it on the head. And especially what I like the most is, as a true good assistant coach, right, you neglected the individual success and flipped it onto the team. And I wasn't trying to set you up for that, but I know that's what a lot of great assistants do, is it has nothing to do with me. And it always has to do with the program. And it gives everybody an idea as to, as you said, right, it's not about me, it's about the greater good. And the success ultimately helps the individuals grow. And the one thing that everybody I feel can learn this is, people see the bad seasons that you go through, right? And not necessarily you, but just everybody. People have a bad season as a coach sometime, and you learn way more through the bad than you do the good, way more. And yeah, I'm a firm believer in that, because I look back, like, yeah, I've had some, as assistant coach, I've had some successful years, but the years when you're not doing as good, it's like, what can we change? But when things are working, why would you change anything? You're not learning, you're not really trying anything new. So I think that hits the nail on the head perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So being said, being an assistant coach, now being an associate head coach, really being in the rooms, I feel like one thing a lot of assistants can, I guess the best way to put it is, like, they don't know when to jump into a conversation and when to step back and push back, maybe is the proper way to put it. So, like, when you're in a room with your staff right now, or just any prior staffs, you're making these big decisions as to maybe how to guard a ball screen, how to guard a certain player, do this, do that, what formations, all those different type of tendencies. How do you know when to push back, like, against a coach and say, no, I think this is what's going to work, this is what's going to work? Or when do you fall in line and just be like, okay?
Yeah, good question. I've been with Coach Enfield for so long that our relationship is different. But when I was younger with him, or just anybody, I probably have the natural tendency to really wait to be called on. And I still probably do that to this day. We got other assistants on staff. So, like, if it's their scout, I really don't say much unless I'm asked to. They don't want me in their business. They don't want me jumping over them. And you hire good people, right? So we put them in charge of doing something. It's up to them to do it, and they have responsibility to do it. And we feel like they can carry that out. So that's probably my natural tendency. I've been with Coach for so long. Also, at this point, I know when he's feeling doing something versus when he's not. And then he knows me well enough that when I feel strongly or convicted enough, that I will say more. Having said that, I've heard some people say, I don't want to work for a guy who's a yes guy and just wants me to say yes all the time, agree with everything. And luckily, Coach Enfield's not like that. But guess what? Your boss doesn't want someone who's going to question everything you do either and have an opinion on everything you do either. All right. There's the balance of that. I think how you present it, the tone of which you come with it when you do have something, is very important too. So I think it's fluid, Doug, to answer your question. I think there's a feel and there's a conviction level, and going about it the right way, and coming with the right tone and knowing when to say it, but also knowing that, again, we have a special relationship with Coach Info. I work with him long enough. I know when it's time to push back through experience. I know when it's time to just shut up through experience. And luckily, going back to your first question you asked, Coach gives a lot of autonomy to everybody. So everyone feels comfortable enough to bring anything up about anything at any given time. And he won't really bat an eye at it. It's also important to know, hey, through this experience, I know what he's thinking. This is what he wants to do. Maybe I bring something up once. If he says no, it's just time to leave it alone, or maybe not even bring it up at all. So I don't think there's a specific answer to your question, Doug, other than you start to develop a feel. You got to feel for who your boss is. You got to feel for who your staff is, how they navigate, how they move. And some of it is just innate. And there's a feel, a reading of the room as to when to back it up and when to say something or when to just shut up. And again, hopefully we all work for someone who wants to take, or who just wants someone to chime in when the time is right or give suggestions. And none of us feel like we can't say it. Not everyone's as fortunate as I am. I know that. But still, even with that, Coach is a smart guy. He's been a head coach for 15 years. He doesn't need me to have an opinion on everything, right? I do have my opinions on everything, but he doesn't need to hear my opinion on everything. Sometimes it's just important. And I try to do this in games. Sometimes it's important just to let him think, just to let him think, because ultimately I can have my opinions, but if the game doesn't go right, it's going to fall on him. And people are going to wonder why he made this decision. And so even though I do have an opinion on most things, it's important for him to think at times and then for him to ask me, hey, what do you want to do or what do you think?
Yeah, man, that's so good. I think the most important thing a head coach needs is his own mind space, his or her own mind space. And if you constantly are just getting thrown things at you information-wise and KenPom ranking this and analytics that, and just it can be too much. But I love the fact you said feel, because that to me is the most important thing. Like, just how we want our players to be able to make the right reads and make the right decisions. This is exactly the same thing. And there's different ways to do it depending on your role, whether you're an experienced guy, you've been with a coach a long time and you take your approach with it, or you're a younger staffer, a first-time assistant, working, maybe you got brought in with a staff that's been together and you're a new guy. Sometimes it's just how you introduce things. It could be, hey, guys, here's some food for thought. Or what do you guys think about this? Or consider this. Or you take a 4x6 note card and you jot two things down. You put it on the head coach's desk after practice and just let him soak it up. So now you don't even have to open your mouth. Or you could text something at night that maybe pops into your head. Hey, coach, I was thinking about this. See what you think. Three bullets, two bullets. But I think the way that you do it is such a big deal, because if it comes off as a million answers all the time, we all know which way that rubs our fur. Versus if it's a consideration or a thought for the entire group, then, you know, that's a different connotation altogether. No, once again, great stuff, man. Great stuff.
No, and you even mentioned too, like in-game adjustments, or when you're saying something to your head coach in a game. The one thing that I've learned, and please correct me if you feel different here, but I think this is what a lot of people have, at least I've heard from. You always want to give short and small segments. Like, you can't sit there and tell a full story. Now, we're talking in-game, you're sitting on the bench, your head coach walking in front of you. Like, you can't sit there and tell a whole story to him. So it's like short, small segments. So you got to find a way, if you want to do this whole long thing, you got to find a way to turn that paragraph into 3-4 words or a sentence, if that. How do you go about approaching something like that, going up to them, being able to say something? Maybe it's in a timeout. Maybe it's in game when the ball's going right past you and you're trying to say something. How do you go about approaching communicating that?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have articulated how you do, but it's to that point, right? Just, hey, coach, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about this? You want to try to do something like this? And again, it's all stuff we probably talked about heading into the game or we've worked on. So none of it's going to be catch him off guard. And so that's generally how, if I feel strongly enough about it, I do try to help him with his rotations through the game. Coach, let's get him, or coach, what do you think about this? And so it is pretty simple and concise, but it's all stuff we've talked about and we worked on. I always usually take the approach of, hey, what do you think about, or would you want to do this or something like that? Obviously, it's not my decision. I can't say, hey, coach, get him, or coach, do this, or hey, we're running this. You know what I mean? So I try to phrase it in a point like, what do you think about? Because honestly, it's his decision, right?
Yes. Yeah. No, you're right, man. It's all how you frame it. And I think practice is a great way as a young coach to practice what you just said. Right? Because in practice, most coaches, the days of maybe the long, maybe John Chaney would do that back in the day, God rest his soul. He would have those guys at Temple practicing at 5:30 in the morning. And he was noted in the past for having just stopping practice and just going on for 10 minutes, versus now we're in an information processing age that's 10, 15, 30 seconds, TikTok, YouTube, bang. But the idea of coaching fast but teaching slow. And you can practice that in practice as an assistant, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can get in, make your point, bang, and then get out of it. Then when a kid slips out and gets a drink or he's out of a certain drill, Now you can teach slow. So you can coach fast when things are on the move. And then the guy checks out of the game or checks out of practice. Now you can do your, you can expand on something. But I think that helps communication skills for a young coach as well. So you don't beat up a point into the ground when it could have been said in 10 seconds.
Coach Capco, what we're going to do is we're going to do into a quick hot seat segment. What that is just really one or two quick questions, just more catch you off, see what you think, and keep your, or I should say, see your live opinion on two quick things. Number one being yourself as a leader, okay? Just kind of more looking through your eyes, like what's something about yourself that you feel as a leader you can still work on?
Delegating. That's more or less what our staff, because I've gotten better at this. It's been something I've been trying to attack the last couple of years. We talked about at the beginning of this podcast that one of the benefits of my career was starting off as a GA and doing some of the stuff away from basketball. One of the worst points as I've gotten older is now I have a philosophy on all that. And I'm on all that stuff that shouldn't matter to me anymore as being an associate coach, because I've been a video guy. I've been in ops. I've done travel. I've done video. I've done the meals. I've done the laundry. I still do scheduling. I still work on housing. So delegating and preparing the guys underneath me to be ready to do that stuff and help developing them with their career. But the problem is for me that I've had to really be conscious of and focus on, and it's like helping me with my scouts still to this day, because I've been a video guy. I download my video. I clip it up. I show it to the team. I do the slides. And I should be developing someone else. But coach is going to ask me to do this stuff, or coaches. And this is just my flow, because it's been my flow since I was a video guy 15 years ago. And it goes to everything. Like I said, I'm still working on housing. I shouldn't be doing that anymore. But it's just been my flow and helping with academics and helping get people into school. And so I've really had to focus on that and delegating better. And because obviously when you become a head coach, you just don't have that time. But it's the benefit and the detriment of how I came up, because I've done everything you can do in this program or in college basketball. I literally have, other than call my own plays and stand up or slide over that chair, I've done everything. And so I have my own philosophy on how things should go and how it should look and stuff like that. So delegation is definitely probably my biggest thing. And as a leader, you have to, as an effective leader, you have to delegate. That's why you have a staff.
No doubt.
Yeah. It helps your system.
The best part about it is, yeah, for sure. Yeah. The best part about it is when you become a head coach, you won't have a choice.
Yep, you've been okay. Yep, exactly.
That's the best thing. That's the best thing about it. But you'll see the benefit of the guys around you when you watch them grow. That will actually inspire you to delegate more, because especially with practice, your first year as a head coach, you're going to want to. You want to be the voice, you want to set your culture, you want to be a tone setter for everything you do, because you have a snapshot for everything that you do and how you want to look. But then you'll get the year two, year three, year four as a head coach, and you'll see your assistants really spike and take off, because practice especially, they need practice coaching. Practice isn't just for players. Practice will be for your assistants too.
Sure.
You'll grasp that more when you slide over, for sure.
And then the second one being just the biggest, or I should say best advice you have for young coaches or anybody who's hoping to potentially grow into a role, associate head coach, assistant coach, head coach, whatever, be able to move up in the profession, just the best advice that you may have for those people starting in those professions.
Again, I'm going to sound like a curmudgeon. There's more kids who are getting their first job at the high major level than ever before. We have them on our staff. They got it better than we did, Coach Major. They got it better than we did. So, coaching roles and stuff like that, I see all these kids, their first job, their high major assistant. I'm like, geez, that must be nice. The one thing, regardless of your position, it's what we talked about at first. Focus on the task at hand. It's like players. I talked to one of our young guys yesterday who he feels, and I get it, he feels like, hey, I got a short rope, or if I make a mistake, I'm coming out. And I get that. And when I was his age, I probably felt the same way. Now I'm a coach. I'm older. You got to give us confidence too, young fella. All right. And it's not just on game day that you give us confidence. It's every day. So for the young guys, what we talked about, if we ask you to set up the meal at the hotel, it needs to be set up. And I know that takes you away from basketball, but what you're really doing is you're instilling confidence. And just one anecdote for me is, look, I was Coach Enfield's ops guy before I was his associate head coach. And he never told me this, but what I'm assuming is because I did a good job in the ops role and video role, that when it was time to promote me, he felt a certain level of confidence to promote me. If I would have been around not doing anything that was asked of me and just trying to be in the coaches' meetings, I probably would have never got promoted. So it was focusing on the task at hand and giving him and the assistant coaches confidence in me that I would be able to fulfill the task at hand as the assistant coach. Then I did a good job as an assistant coach, and then he made me his associate head coach. So there's a confidence level that you can instill in people when it comes time to make decisions about you, because you're doing some of the little stuff more so than you're doing some of the bigger stuff. But if you don't do the little stuff and it goes unfulfilled, we notice that. I definitely notice. It goes back to the whole delegation thing. If I ask a GA to do something as small as it is and it's not done, I notice it. I notice it. And if you do it, I don't notice it because it's been done. But I also do have a collection of, hey, he's taking care of the task at hand. And it doesn't still, it's like we have certain guys coming in to work out. Hey, and NBA guys right now who are done with their season, where I put it on a certain GA to make sure you let them in and you know that this stuff is handled. And I know my phone doesn't ring if it is handled. My phone rings if it's not handled. So guess what? The next time someone comes and I need something done, I'm not asking you. And I've made my mental note. I've talked to you about it. Take account for all that stuff. And so that's the best thing I can give young coaches. Just focus on the task at hand and instill confidence in the people above you.
That's amazing. Yeah. No, and no, as I said, the biggest thing off that too is if you delegate that to somebody, they don't do it. So they're supposed to let so-and-so into the door at a certain time and they don't let them in. Guess whose fault that is? Ultimately, it's your fault because it looks like that you're the one, but you delegated it to somebody else. So it's like now the blame's coming back on me. It's just a whole, that's phenomenal.
Yeah. No, I had a manager. We're on the road here, obviously, and I had a little bit of laundry to throw into the pile, and I put it in one of the bags, and he gave me the laundry back after pregame yesterday, and you'd have thought that he was handing tea to the governor, that he cared that much to get the laundry right.
Because he was.
This kid's going to make a lot of money. He's going to make a lot of money someday, though. That's just because of that right there. And he made me feel like my laundry was the most important thing in his day.
Yeah.
And he had 19 other things going on a game day.
Yeah.
Man, Chris, listen, man, obviously keep punching people in the mouth down there. I remember you wouldn't have met me, but I was doing some volunteer consulting at Butler last year. And I remember when you guys came to play at Butler, not this past year. The year before. But I just remember how the size across your front line, you had 7 guys, 6'10 or higher. I'm like, what in the world is going on? These dudes, you should have seen these dudes in warmups, man. Every other guy's putting his neck on the rim during warmups. But continued success there, man. And this was so good just to plant and replant some things in young coaches' minds that are trying to progress in their career. But really great stuff, man. This was awesome.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
No doubt. Thank you. And this is right before season 2 was hitting the road for you. I should say season 1 is wrapping up and season 2, the playoffs, is starting to hit. So no, thank you very much for taking some time. We do appreciate it. And I'm sure that a lot of people out there appreciate it as well.
No problem.
Absolutely.
To all of you, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, keep working, keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all soon. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the #1 selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. We'll